So good morning. My name is William Riley. First of all, I'm glad to see last week. I'm glad I didn't scare you off. I'm serving as a teacher with Edgewood. I'm here, pastor, basically. I go to Candler. I'm excited this morning. I have an exciting announcement. My mother and father-in-law are here. They're right here. So make sure, right? Tell them how great I am later. You know, just mention, slide that in there. Your daughter didn't make a bad decision. No, so we're glad they're here. We are, like Nathan said, we are in our Signs of the Kingdom series. And today I'm going to be talking about peace, right? The word peace. I think that the church, the Christian church, has a peace problem, okay? And what I mean by that is I think we're not good at it, but I also think, like, the concept of peace is a pretty big deal. Like, if you just, like, spend any amount of time at all reading about Jesus, like, just the concepts of peace just kind of keep up, right? It's kind of all throughout the Bible. Like, Jesus did things like he would hang out with people he was supposed to, including his enemies. You know, it wasn't even just, like, the prostitutes and the sinners. It was also, like, the Pharisees who eventually killed him. Like, Jesus hung out with people. You know, Jesus was willing to go and touch a leper, which was a really big deal at the time. You know, he's willing to break these social norms and context in this kind of peaceful sense. And it doesn't mean, like, Jesus was, like, oblivious to evil. You know, Jesus fought the system. He fought the man. He was, you know, against oppression and stuff. But he did it in this really peaceful way, such that while Jesus was literally being murdered and hanging on the cross, he said, "Forgive them. They don't know what they're doing." You know, like, that is the level of peace that Jesus was at, was looking at people who were nailing him to a cross and saying, "Forgive them, Father." On the other hand, the church, like the whole holistic church, we are not quite that good. You know, like, we don't quite get there. But I think we are getting there. But that's what I mean when I say that the church has a peace problem. And so this morning we're going to look at that a little bit. We're going to look at how we reconcile those two pictures of peace. Just to kind of give a demonstration of where Jesus' mindset on peace was, I'm going to read Jesus talking. I know it's Jesus because it's red. I'm going to read Jesus talking. Sharon says, "Oh no." This is in Matthew 5, starting at verse 38. If anybody has a Bible, if you don't, they're in the back. Don't get it now, but later, you know. Matthew 5, verse 38. And it says, "You have heard what it is said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you," I as in Jesus, "I say to you that you must not oppose those who want to hurt you. If they slap you on your right cheek, you must turn the left cheek to them as well. When they wish to haul you to court and take your shirt, let them have your coat too. When they force you to go 1 mile, go with them. Give to those who ask, don't refuse those who wish to borrow from you. You have heard what it is said, you must love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies and pray for those who harass you, so that you will be acting as children of your Father who is in heaven. He makes the sun rise on both the evil and the good, and sends rain on both the righteous and the unrighteous." All right, so that is the Jesus perspective of peace. That is what we're trying to get to. The love your enemies as yourself. Someone asks for your shirt, give them a coat. That kind of mentality, you know. Walk 1 mile, walk two. This story that they had you read is a weird one, but I think, all right, this story of Saul and David, I think, gets us there. So we're going to walk through this story and figure out how does it get us to what Jesus is talking about. We have to go back a little bit. We need to talk about who Saul and David were. So, just out of curiosity, does anybody know anything? Who was David? He was a king. Okay, king of what? King? A king of Israel, all right? He's the king of Israel. He was the second king. Who was the first king of Israel? Saul, the other guy, right? Okay, so he's the second king of Israel. Do we know anything else about David? He was a son, most likely youngest. Yeah, no, he was the youngest son of Jesse. Okay. There was him and Bathsheba. That's a whole thing. Him and Bathsheba. The kids are out of the room, so we can say him and Bathsheba. Yeah, uh-huh. Line of David, yeah. David, what, right? That's probably like the like stereotypical thing we know about David. David was a man after God's own heart. Ruth was his grandma. He was a shepherd. He wrote some psalms, probably, yeah. The kids probably know about that they would have said is David and Goliath. You know, like he took out Goliath. So we are very aware of who David is, right? All right, so what do we know about Saul? We've already said Saul was the first king. He was tall, probably like a good-looking, you know, like kind of like myself. He was good-looking and stuff and a warrior. Not like me at all. He wasn't obedient to what? Okay, yes, he ended up not being obedient to God. There's that whole, like, messy sitch. Anybody else? What else do we know about Saul? He gets a little crazy. I don't know if he starts, but he gets a little crazy. Yeah. He tries to kill David. Yeah. That is actually one of my favorite things where God, it talks about the spirit of God being taken from Saul. It's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. I like the weird stuff, okay? I like the weird stuff in the Bible. That's one of the things I really like. That's not this sermon. All right. But so we know about Saul and David. So I can be pretty brief with this, but just to get us to where we're at, where this story takes place. So Saul is the king of Israel. He's the first king of Israel, right? Like, he unites the tribes. Grr, I'm Saul. I'm great. And he is called by God as that, right? It's not just like Saul just does it. Like, Saul is called by God. He is picked. He is the king of Israel. Everything is going great. He's awesome. He's rugged and good looking. He's like this, just like, awesome dude, right? And then, even enter the picture, David's this young little shepherd. David kills fame and notoriety. Suddenly, everybody's like, oh man, we love David. Like, Saul was great, but like, David killed Goliath. So Saul starts to get a little jealous, but also at the same time, he is like kind of mentoring David, right? Like, do y'all remember that part where like he's in the palace and David's playing for Saul and David becomes friends with Saul's son, Jonathan, who is like kind of rightful heir to the throne by monarchy things. And so that could be an interesting thing. But so David and Jonathan become best friends. They're hanging out. There's kind of like this mentor relationship. Saul gets really talked about and Saul starts trying to kill David, right? Like, there's this scene in the palace where Saul throws a spear at David, or like all these crazy times where Saul's like hunting David and trying to kill him. And David just like barely gets away, or like all sorts of like, First and Second Samuel, where we're reading, like, it's fascinating stuff because it's just like wet. He's just constantly trying to kill David, right? David over here has been by God to be the next king. David knows I am the next king. Like, he is aware of this at this point. He has this kind of army following him around. And David is running from Saul, trying to not die. Saul is chasing him, trying to make him die. All of this is going on, and that is where we get to where we're at in the story right now, all right? So David's hanging out. Saul is fighting another person because Israel is not alone in the world. There are other people actively attacking Israel. So Saul is fighting these other people, and Saul dies in battle, right? Like, depending on which Samuel you read, kind of depends on which way Saul dies in battle. But important thing is Saul dies in battle, all right? Saul is dead, and David hears about it, and that is what we just read, all right? So to recap briefly what we just read, David, this guy runs up and he's got the crown and he's like, David, great news, Saul's dead, here's the crown. It's not exactly what he says, but it's pretty much it. David, great news, Saul's dead, here's the crown. And David's like, whoa, how did Saul die? He's like, well, he was on his spear, so I killed him and I took the crown. Like, love you, David, here you go. And then David, I wasn't really paying attention, so I don't know if we read this part or not, but like the next little section, David says, how dare you kill the king, and kills that guy and takes the crown. And it says he rips his clothes and he goes into mourning for Saul, all right? He mourns Saul's death. David gets really angry and sad about Saul dying, right? Which, based off the last 5 minutes of what we've been talking about, seems real weird. You know, like, it seems real weird. And that is why I think this story can show us Jesus on the cross saying, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. David saying, how dare you kill the king? Side note, the guy that's trying to kill me. One story, my favorite backstory moment in this time, where Saul's in a cave trying to pee, and David sneaks up behind him and cuts off a bit of his cloak. And then Saul leaves, and David's like, I got your cloak. I could have killed you, but I didn't. You guys remember that part? That's one of my favorite things, mostly because favorite things. I'm like, I pee outside. I could be king. Anyways, so that is where we're at. So, what? I warned Sharon in advance. I said, Sharon, I'm so sorry. You're a very educated person, and I am not. I'm sorry for what I'm about to say. Why are we talking about this on Peace? How does this connect? I think there's a couple going on with David really, really learn from. All right, and so we're just going to dive right in and do it. And the first thing is, when David sees Saul, David does not just see the label of guy trying to kill me, okay? To David, Saul is so much more than just enemy. Saul is mentor. Saul is king of Israel. Saul is best friend's dad. Saul is so many more things than just guy trying to kill me, right? Right? We need to also be like that. We have a tendency as people to assign labels to other people, and then that's their identity. That's what they are, period. You know, so like I see Levi and I think Hoosier, period, that's what he is. He is not. Now, I got to be honest with you. I didn't fully understand this concept. I am obviously a great human being. I had no enemies. I loved everyone. And then I drove in Atlanta one time. And I get it now. Because someone cuts me off and my thought is not, oh, look at that human being who's probably like going to the hospital. It's, Audi, why did you cut me off? I see bad driver. You know, we assign labels to people, whatever that might be. You know, it could be Democrat, Republican, Trump supporter. It could be immigrant. You know, it could be black or rich. Whatever the label is, we assign a label to someone, and then that is who they are. That is their identity. The trick is when we do that, we dehumanize people. Because humans are by nature really complex, and we are by nature making them simple. And so we take someone's humanity away, and then it gets really easy to hate them. And it gets really easy to be mad at them. And it gets really easy to say, well, I'm going to cut them off back, or just cut them back, depending on how it goes. I'm going to do that back because that's not another human. That's a jerk driver. You know, like, that person's mean, so it's okay for me to be mean because I've taken their person away. All right? So that's the first thing that David does, is David does not see Saul as an individual label. David sees Saul as a complex. You see this with Jesus all the time. You know, the disciples are like, whoa, Jesus, that guy's a Pharisee. And he's like, and he's also. Jesus sees the complexity of people. Jesus sees more than just a leper. Jesus sees more than just a sinner. Jesus sees more than just a prostitute. Jesus sees a person. And the truth is, what Jesus sees is Jesus sees a God. And this is the second thing that David saw that I think we need to do. Is David, there's a person there, David said, execute this guy because he has killed the anointed one of God. All right? Because Saul was the anointed one of God. He's of God. David still saw, even though David knew he was the anointed king, and even though David knew that Saul was terrible, he still saw Saul as someone that is God's. Saul belongs to God. And that's how David saw him. When Jesus interacts with these people, he doesn't just see them by whatever word. What he sees them as is children of God. And that is an especially hard thing for us. Because we are really good about saying that about ourselves. You know, we're really good about saying like, yeah, God created me in his image. You know, very good. Not even just good, very good. Hello. Good at that for ourselves. And then we're really good at just like entirely forgetting that as soon as we look at any other human being ever. You know, like every single person is a child. And what they do with that is up for debate. And that doesn't mean that everybody's perfect. But every single person is a child of God. And so we remember that about people when they're interacting with them, is that this is someone beloved by God. And that's hard. Like, that's a hard thing to let in. But David does it. David says, no, Saul is someone chosen and beloved by God. All right, and so then, when he does that, when David does that, recognizes the complexity of Saul, and when David recognizes not just the complexity of Saul, but that all up under Saul is a child of God. When he does those two things, David gets to do something I think is really important for us to do too. So people get caught up. They're like, so wait, why was David mad? Like, why did David kill the guy? And why did David tear his cloth? Like, shouldn't David be excited that Saul is dead because David is now king and not being like chased? What I've heard from a couple of Bible scholars is that David did not want to set the precedent of it was okay to kill, right? Because if you think about it, David is becoming king, right? David is becoming the anointed one of God, as he puts it. David is becoming king, and David knows one of these days I'm going to do something wrong. One of these days there's going to be a hottie on a roof, and I'm going to do something wrong. You know, David is aware of that. And so David is able to see himself in Saul. He's able to identify how they are the same, how they are similar. And because of that, he wants to treat Saul a little differently because he wants to be treated a little differently. And so he wants people to think, I better not kill David, because if you kill the anointed king, you die. He's establishing that precedent so that it can also be the precedent for him. And the truth is, that is true in modern day. Just like we are children of God and other people are, we are also sinners that have fallen short of the glory of God, just like other people have. And so when we look at someone and we're so ready to say, like, well, yeah, you did this, it's important for us to remember that, like, we have also done that. And if not that, something probably similar to it. Because we all mess up, right? We are all complex human beings that are children of God, but constantly do not live up to that moniker of children. And so we all constantly need forgiveness and grace. You know, Jesus talks about this parable where there's these people and somebody, like, basically he hires a bunch of day laborers. You know, he goes to Home Depot, he picks up a bunch of day laborers, and he picks up some at 8 a.m. and they're doing great and they're working, and he picks up some more at 12 and they're doing great and they're working, and he picks up some more at like 4, right? And so then, like, they're just now starting to break a sweat, and 5 o'clock comes around. And he's like, all right, that's good enough. Everybody go home. Here, all of you, here's $100, right? And $100 is like, that's a pretty good payment. I'm like, hey, I'll take that. But the people who had been there since 8, they only worked an hour and got $100. We've worked all day and gotten $100. What's up, right? And in that parable, Jesus is basically saying, I'm in charge. All of you have done something. Don't try to figure out how I distribute things. Just be happy you're getting what you get. Right, in a weird way, that's a very rough translation of that. But it's the same kind of thing is here. We all receive God's grace daily. We all receive God's mercy daily. And if we're honest, we all receive each other's grace and mercy daily too. You know, how many times cut someone else off in traffic and they have not rear-ended me and shot me or something? I don't know. How many times have I messed up and I'm just like, think it's okay to just do a wave? You know, how many times do I just screw up? Just am so confident that other person's going to forgive me, but then I don't extend it to them. You know, that is the dilemma. So we start to realize we're all in this together, and I need to treat that person the way I want to be treated. Oh, it's almost like my second grade teacher told me that. But this is, like, you know, so when you're at a restaurant and the cashier is just awful, you need to remember there are times in my life that I am just awful at my job too, you know, or like when someone comes to you and they say, hey, I voted this way, and you're like, how could they ever do that? You need to remember there have been times that you voted for Ralph Nader too. You know, there is a lot, I'm too young for Ralph Nader, I'm sorry if any of you voted for him. Anyhow, there are so many times that we need grace. All right, so we need to cling to that. We need to see that we and each other are very complex people. That we cannot just be associated by one or one label, but that also we are children of God, and that we were created by a loving God that still loves us. And all of us, relatively, are in the same boat of being sinners. And so all of us are so glad that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for our sins. You know? And when we do all of that, suddenly it becomes easier to be peaceful. It becomes easier to appreciate the other. It becomes easier to forgive that person's simple mistake because, like, I make a lot of simple mistakes. It becomes easier to spread peace in the world. And the cool thing is when you start doing it, kind of has this trickle effect. You know, like when I don't get real angry and start doing bad things, other people see that and they also don't get real angry. Like, we change our perspective. I heard on NPR the other day, I heard a thing that was like, they did the psychological study and they found out that moods are contagious, which, like, if you own a child, you know that's true. But have a child. I am obviously not a parent yet. If you have a child, you know that is true. But moods are contagious. Right? And so if I am going around spreading this joy and this peace and this kingdom restoration stuff, it catches on and other people figure it out. You know, like, that's what Jesus was all about. He didn't have to be violent and oppressive and crazy because other people saw what he was doing and it caught on and they said, yeah, peacefully do this. You know, there's so much power in that if we individually are willing to take that on. And I'm going to tell you, I think that this church is great at this. I think this church is really good at doing this. You are really good at not seeing people as just the label society gives. You know, you are really good at saying, like, it black, white, homeless, rich, you know, liberal, conservative, it doesn't matter, you are here. And you're really good at that because you're also really good at seeing people as children of God. You know, there's so many times that I've heard someone say, like, yeah, they're a bit crazy, but, like, they're my church family. Like, I love them. You know, like, you are united. They weren't talking about you, Emily. They weren't. You weren't the crazy one. It was Jordan. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, right? Who hasn't? There are so many times that you see people as more than just this label because you see them as a child of God, and then you're willing to forgive. I have experienced your forgiveness a number of times. You're willing to forgive people because of that. I think y'all are great at this in the context of this church. So my first point, my first concluding point, so don't get crazy, is that I think this is something you excel at, but also I think that this is something that needs to go beyond these walls. I think this is something that doesn't just need to be like, oh, they're my church family. It's, oh, they're a child of God in my workplace or when I'm driving on 7585 or whatever that is. This needs to extend out because we need to be a light to the world. You know, we need to be a beacon of Christ. And so that is the encouragement, is to go do that, is to take what you do here so well and let that be in other aspects of your life, in every aspect of your life. I want to close with an anecdotal example, and then, because it's not a sermon without an anecdotal example, and then and that'll be that. There is this incredible story that just really emphasizes, and for that, I actually have some notes because I do not remember everything about this story. So, 4 or 5 years ago, there was this guy named Joshua Bell. Has anybody ever heard of Joshua Bell? The violinist, right? So, I had never heard of Joshua Bell. I said this to one. He's a guy, and he was like, Joshua Bell, he's like the Justin Bieber violin. He was all excited, it was weird. So there's this guy named Joshua Bell, who's this incredible violinist. He's probably like one of the three best in the world. I don't know how you rank that, but he's one of the three best violinists ever. He is, you know, he is GOAT. And so he's there, and he's like this young, suave-looking dude, you know, kind of like Saul. He's just like, just good-looking-esque person, playing the and smooth-talking people, heartthrob of America. He does this concert in Washington, D.C., at the Symphony Orchestra in Washington, D.C. He does this concert in Washington, D.C., right, at the Symphony Orchestra. I got sidetracked. It's this incredible thing, right? And he kills it. Tickets are like $100 for, like, the nosebleeds. You know, people are like, all the big people in Washington, D.C. are at this concert and just crushes it, right? The next day, the Washington Post takes him and they dress him person and right, that's all. They just dress him like a homeless person, stick him in the subway. He's got a Stradivarius violin. It's worth $3.5 million, this violin. One violin, $3.5 million. He goes into this subway and he plays for 45 minutes. He plays this violin piece that only about four people in the world are able to play. It's like that complex and it's just gorgeous, right? It's this just gorgeous violin piece. He plays his violin piece, and this guy who the night before had just packed this house, made thousands and thousands of dollars. He's this homeless person in rush hour Washington, D.C. subway. Over 45 minutes, a total of 20 people stopped and donated a total of $32, right? That's how much he raised. Talk about a humbling moment, right? So 20 people donated. The only person that, like, actually dwelled and stopped was someone who had been at the show the night before and thought they recognized him. And so they were like, hey, I know you. You're that guy. That was the only person that stopped. Everybody else just kind of threw some change in and kept going, right? $32, arguably the world's best ever, right? Afterwards, he said, it was the first time I'd ever played my violin and stopped and didn't hear applause. He's like, it's the first time, right? I was like, well, okay, we get it. You're good, Josh Bell. But so through that article, what the writer concludes is, the writer says, these people who in Washington, D.C., you know, these people hold themselves as these incredible people of society, sophistication, cultured. They're art people, off to their, like, busy, fancy jobs. these people were not able to recognize one of the most artistically beautiful things probably that they would ever experience because it was out of context. The frame was wrong. You know, they had framed Josh Bell in such a way that people couldn't recognize it, right? So the William interpretation of that is people were so focused on the label of homeless musician, they weren't able to see the masterpiece of Josh Bell. And that is every single day, is we focus on the label of whatever, and we miss the masterpiece that is God's creation. So I want you guys, go into the world, take peace into the world, and I guarantee you, you will discover a few masterpieces that you would have missed. Praise be to God. Amen.